This is Monitor saluting the big bands, and here's another one that's still doing business, based these days mostly in Las Vegas. Back in 1941, I was there in the control room when Harry James recorded a fine girl singer named Helen Forrest, and this is the way they sounded on a number called I've Heard That Song Before. One of the perennials among the big band leaders is Lawrence Welk, still playing music that his fans think is wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. 9 o'clock jump, the theme song of Bill Count Basie on Monitor 73, where tonight the big bands swing again. In a few moments, you'll meet Count Basie and find out if he shares Woody Herman's high opinion of young musicians today. Right after, we hear a sample of what's made him so admired by jazz fans everywhere. John's idea, Count Basie. Every so often, I'm surprised to add up how many big bands are still doing business, and one that's been swinging for 35 years is the fine outfit fronted by the indestructible Count Basie.
Is it 35 years?
35 years.
Oh, boy.
In a free association test, just about any jazz fan who hears the title 1 o'clock Jump would automatically say Count Basie, because that's been his theme song from just about the beginning. But why should I tell you about him? Well, we've got him sitting right here with us in the studio. Count, welcome to Monitor.
Thank you. Thanks a million. Certainly is a pleasure.
I don't know where to start because there's so much to say about the Basie legend. Who discovered you, though? We know what you've discovered, but who discovered you?
I think that it all got sort of got started by a guy by the name of John Hammond. Because John jumped out to Kansas City and caught the band, which he had heard over at his little radio that he used to turn on early in the morning. And John came out to Kansas City and caught the band and came back and told Benny and Willard Alexander about it, you know, and then from then on
it was all history.
One thing and another.
Yeah, but busy history. John Hammond, of course, keeps popping up as a name in all our conversations about the big bands. This brilliant young American who's really in love with popular music and has devoted so much of his life to bringing the best of it out to the general public. He's kind of a phenomenon. There probably isn't another John Hammond.
Absolutely not.
There may not be another John Hammond. The Harlem of the 20s and 30s was a fabulous place for music. Do you think that there's ever going to be a place like that, where the Apollo Theater, the Savoy Ballroom, the Dickie Wells, Cabin?
Sure, there's going to be another place like that. Where, though? Because I don't think there will ever be another Savoy, and I don't think it's a possibility of being another Apollo like it was, because the people are not there. And I mean the atmosphere, the surroundings and everything, which made the Savoy and which all the things that were happening there, which it stood for so much, you know. Of course, there'd be other ballrooms, of course, and things like that, but it's going to be kind of hard.
You can't go home again, they say.
It's tough.
What's your favorite country for a response? Is there one audience that really just throws it back as fast as you throw it at them in applause and in motion?
That's so hard to tell. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be that you could say Europe, you know. But right here, I mean, it's great. There's no greater applause in the world than you can from a university.
Mm-hmm. You've played colleges, I know, all across the country, and the band is still in great demand to come back and back again and again. Must be a great thrill for you to see all young faces out front.
Oh, yes, and they're doing so much for jazz, and they're having the jazz clinics and so forth that are going on now. And I was quite upset in Houston. We played a college there, and about a half hour before we went on, the college band of about 20 kids were so very anxious to play for us, you know. So I asked them, I said, why don't you play? So they said, well, they didn't think we wanted them to. I said, yes, why not? And so we were in their rehearsal room, so they got everybody together real fast, and they played. And you know, they shouldn't have.
That's funny.
Because it spoiled our whole night.
No, I don't quite believe that. But
listen, do you hear what I'm telling you?
Well, maybe they gave you competition.
Well, I'm telling you.
But that's good for you.
There was something else.
Keep you on your toes.
That's
fine. How many men do you travel with now, Count Basie? How big is the orchestra?
Well, 16. I make the 17th guy to piano player.
We always ask this question of a top band leader. What haven't you achieved? What haven't you done? Where haven't you played? What kind of an album won't they let you make because they haven't gotten around to it yet? But
it doesn't go like that, that they won't let you make.
Well, I mean, sometimes if it's, say you wanted to do a classical album, maybe.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Well, then what is the goal, the unattainable goal that you haven't quite reached yet that you'd like to?
Well, I don't know. I just keep working. Mm-hmm. And keep working. I mean, sometimes we might run up on something that might be a little different.
Oh, you always do.
I mean, you never can tell what might happen. Who knows what you're actually looking for?
Well, Count, you just finished up at the Masonette, a sensationally successful engagement. Here it is Sunday night, and I suppose you're off for a vacation. I see some luggage there. Are you headed off for a little tour of doing nothing?
Oh, yes, we're headed for a little tour, but it'll be doing something.
Uh-huh. Where are you going?
Yeah, we're going down to the West Indies on this little ship ride.
The whole band?
Cumberry, yeah.
Playing on board?
Definitely.
You mean you're leaving tonight?
We're leaving tonight.
Can I come with you?
Oh, why not?
Thank you, Count Basie. Swinging the Blues, Count Basie and his orchestra. It was interesting that the Count had the same high praise for the young musicians of today that Woody Herman expressed. Well, ahead we'll meet another man who's been doing a lot of work on college campuses and see if he agrees. Stay tuned for more right here on the Monitor Beacon. Thank you. Art Ford from Monitor, and this is the Stan Kenton Orchestra with Eager Beaver. One of the most stimulating outfits still around is the Stan Kenton Orchestra, still being called controversial after more than 30 years in the music business. Stan himself is a man of positive opinions, personally as well as in his music. And luckily for us, we were able to persuade him to join us this evening to talk about his life as a maker of original music. And here he is. Stan, you've always had the reputation of being an experimenter, avant-garde, ahead of your time in jazz. Do you think of yourself that way?
No, not really. I think it's up to the people that listen to us to label us. I think if I suddenly created an image and said I'll live by it, it would be contrived and phony. I've only played music that I think the way it should be played, and I think that anybody that tries to conduct some kind of a survey to find out what the public wants and give it to them is making a mistake, because I think it's an artist's duty to create the finest thing he knows how and then hope for public acceptance. Now, I know I've been called avant-garde and experimenter and everything, but I don't know. I never think of myself as being that way.
Well, I know you've done a lot of work with college students. Will you tell us something about that?
We became involved with universities, colleges, and more recently high schools a number of years ago because there was such a need on the part of young musicians to learn about jazz music. There were no schools and no books written on it, and the young musician that aspired to a jazz career just didn't know where to go to get information or any kind of knowledge. So we started what we called the Kenton Clinics, in which we would go to a university and invite the young musicians and their teachers in, their band directors in, and we would study jazz together. And we'd invite them for a whole week at some major university. But in the last 3 years, we have been taking the band right into the schools, and we'd be there for 1 day, 2 days, or 3 days, working with the music department and the humanities department, either in colleges, universities, and high schools to a great extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stan, I must ask you this question. Where do the big bands go from here?
Well, I don't know. I don't think anyone has any crystal ball. How do we know where they're going? You have the older generation that is always hoping that the big bands will come back, and what's really going on in their mind is they hope that they'll hear the music they used to hear when they were younger played over again. And that, of course, will never happen, because it shouldn't happen. Things have to move forward. Because of the tremendous activity today in music across the country, I have I think the future looks very healthy for big bands, especially in the jazz idiom. Most people, I believe, think that all young musicians are guitar players and singers, but they're certainly not. There are tens of thousands of musicians across this country in all schools everywhere playing jazz and trying to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, finally, Stan, is there any advice you would give to a young musician?
Well, I think the only advice really I have is today in music, as in every other field, it's very specialized. It used to be years ago that a man could go down to a hawk shop and buy a saxophone and 2 weeks later have a job playing at some joint, but it's not that way anymore. Most all of the musicians have to be well-schooled, which means, of course, a good university and college training, because a young musician today must play all kinds of music. He must not only play classical music, but he must play jazz music, because not like it once was, where a fellow says, I'm a classical musician, I don't have anything to do with jazz, and somebody else would say, I'm a jazz musician, and forget classical music. It's all one thing today, and believe me, the musicianship, I think, today among young musicians is much better than ever before. You can't compare the young musicians with their dads and uncles, because they really know what they're doing. It's kind of like a couple of years ago, somebody asked Bobby Jones, the veteran golfer, how the golfers of his day would compare with the golfers of today, and he said the golfers of his day wouldn't even dare get on the same golf course. And I think it's the same thing in music.
Thank you, Stan, for your comments and for sharing our monitor microphone this evening. Stan Kenton, a positive thinker on and off the bandstand. And again, high praise for the young artists on today's music scene. So maybe the future of music of all kinds, including the big band sound, is in very good hands. Whatever your age, whether these sounds have brought you a sense of nostalgia or discovery, we do hope you've enjoyed Monitor's presentation of the Big Band Swing Again Part 2, and that you were inspired to kick back a corner of the rug and dance a little. And if you haven't yet, well, here's one last chance. This program was produced and directed by George Butsis and written by Hank Miles. Audio engineers John Marin and John Clark. And this is your host, Art Ford, inviting you to stay tuned now for NBC News on the Hour.
NBC Monitor News, I'm Bill Fitzgerald. The U.S. Pacific Command reports that B-52 bombers and other U.S. military aircraft hit communist positions again today in Cambodia. It was the 40th straight day of the U.S. bombing runs. The action today was centered 15 miles from the capital, Phnom Penh, and kept communist forces from interfering with 8 cargo ships which reached the city with food, fuel, and war supplies. Reports that South Vietnamese ground troops have crossed the border into Cambodia are denied by South Vietnamese military officials. Dennis Ryan reports from Saigon.
A spokesman for the South Vietnamese Military Command says South Vietnamese forces have not entered Cambodia, and news reports saying they have are false. According to Lieutenant Colonel Lê Trung Hien, the command military spokesman, there are no South Vietnamese troops inside Cambodia. Field reports Sunday said a column of South Vietnamese armor and ground troops was about 1/2 mile inside Cambodia, and a battle with communist forces was in progress. A group of Cambodian refugees crossed into South Vietnam Friday when communist troops attacked and destroyed their village just inside the Cambodian border, according to reports from the scene. The South Vietnamese spokesman did not elaborate on the fighting near the border, but denied all reports that South Vietnamese forces had crossed into Cambodia. Dennis Ryan, NBC News, Saigon.
Former Cambodian leader Prince Norodom Sihanouk charged today that General Alexander Haig has planned a two-front invasion of Cambodia using troops from South Vietnam and Thailand. Haig has just returned from a survey of the Cambodian situation for President Nixon. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, J. William Fulbright, said today that Congress is virtually powerless to keep the Nixon administration from continuing the heavy bombing in Cambodia. Fulbright added that a cutoff of funds would not have an immediate effect, but would in the long run. And on NBC's Meet the Press, the Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew, said he does not think the communists are in a position to take Cambodia. He added, however, the Reds' goal is really South Vietnam, and if they take over there, they will control Cambodia. A Senate committee headed by Senator Edward Kennedy opens an inquiry tomorrow into the effect of the U.S. bombing in Cambodia. Kennedy says it is time the U.S. stopped sending its bombers over Cambodia and started sending its diplomats to help arrange a ceasefire. The Pentagon will send a list to Congress tomorrow of the military bases to be closed or cut back. The move is apparently being made to eventually save up to $1 billion a year, and the action will also result in the elimination of tens of thousands of jobs. Reports say the Massachusetts area will be hard hit and that Fort Dix, New Jersey, will be one of the installations closed. President Nixon will be making a trip abroad in the fall. White House aides said today Mr. Nixon will probably travel to Germany, Italy, France, and Great Britain. The exact dates were not revealed. Before the president departs, however, many leaders of the nations he will visit are expected in Washington. And it was announced today that Soviet Communist Party leader Leonid Brezhnev will arrive in Washington late in June. The head of the Environmental Protection Agency, William Ruckelshaus, sees Congress less inclined to relax automobile emission standards now. He thinks the lawmakers will insist that the automakers comply with the standards now that they have until 1976 to do so. Ruckelshaus also predicted that the automakers will try to have Congress weaken the standards already decided upon. And he denied charges by consumer advocate Ralph Nader that he bowed to pressure by big business in delaying the auto exhaust emission standards for 1 year. The co-pilot of a Libyan jetliner shot down by Israeli warplanes in February spoke out today. He said the plane's pilot had heard the warning shots and at first agreed to land. Then he changed his mind and tried to escape back into Egyptian airspace. 109 persons were killed in the tragedy. The co-pilot was the lone survivor. The ocean liner Queen Elizabeth II left England for Israel today. The ship is under heavy security guard for fear of Arab guerrilla attacks during the voyage. Among the passengers are hundreds of Jews, and there are at least 30 security men aboard. When the liner reaches the Mediterranean, it will pick up an escort of British naval boats and Royal Air Force jets. A Protestant woman was shot and killed by terrorists in her home in Belfast, Northern Ireland tonight. Earlier, British troops shot a teenage brother and a sister in Belfast, Ireland, and then apologized for the incident. Officials say the two young people were probably shot by mistake by soldiers patrolling a section of the city continued to be a stronghold of the outlawed Irish Republican Army. The Hour's lead story. B-52 bombers hit communist targets in Cambodia for the 40th straight day today, but South Vietnamese officials deny their troops have crossed the border into Cambodia. Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News.